Let's talk about sex, baby. But before we get into it, tell me, spit or swallow? Hi, welcome back to another episode of Spit or Swallow with your favorite host, House of Chocolate. Yay! Today is an amazing day as per usual. And with me, I have my favorite guest. At this point, this is my cheat code. Ed is literally my cheat code. If the Spit or Swallow is done, I will always bring Ed back to this show. Our one and only sex sensei, Ed. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Thank you for having me again.
Always
glad to be back.
I mean, always happy to have you here. Do you want to introduce yourself to, our new, because we have a new... Yes.
Hi, listeners. My name is Ed. I am a journalist, critic, and amateur sex sensei. Amateur, like mid-level.
But... Mid-level. Because when Ed comes, me, I just be here listening. And I like that, I like the fact that you actually sit down and, you create your own theories, you use your experience, you do research, and you try to, delve deeper into the world of sex in a social and also scientific manner. I like scientific, yes. But it's also fun and relatable, and you do give me a lot to think about as well. It's, angles that sometimes I've never have explored to, that level. I like the depth with which you actually,
I think sex is, such an important part of our lives that mm-hmm. it kind of feels a little criminal not to even consider it deeply, mm-hmm. especially it's going to affect, so many aspects of your life. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And, something I always say, I don't understand why people trivialize it. I mean, I get why people tend to shy away from it, but this is something that we should be talking about. It is extremely important. And so I always say in Nigeria, especially, we're so surface level when it comes to sex because it's so deep. Mm-hmm. But, a lot of the teachings and what people even use it for in the first place, I often talk about how sex can be really healing and just a lot of dynamics that go into that. It can be empowering as well. But, mm-hmm. some people just want to bust the nuts and move on. And I mean, that's also fair, but it's nice to be able to have this kind of
conversation
about sex and sexuality. But before we get into it, Spit or Swallow, how many times are you asking?
This is my third time. It keeps changing every time. And back to Spit.
Yeah, back to Spit.
Yes, because my current partner, we have a nickname. It's called Gushy Gymnast.
Gushy Gymnast.
Yes, and... Because there's a lot of spitting involved and a lot of gushing. So
a lot of spitting and gushing. Yes. I love that. All right. We're going to play a little game.
I'm scared.
I don't know even that deep, but pick three cards. Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry for my mic.
I'll pick one from separate colors. Blue and red or green. Feel safe. Okay.
Question I asked you. Wonderful. The blue card says, would you date your friend's ex?
Yes.
Tell us why.
Because we're all adults, mm-hmm. and unless your ex, your friend's ex was an incredibly terrible person, lots of people, their relationships end because they're incompatible, they've mm-hmm. outgrown each other for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
So unless you were an asshole to my friend.
Yeah.
My friend should be open to, you finding happiness and I finding happiness. So,
exactly.
Please, the door is open.
And when I say this thing, the thing is, I've always had this stance as well. But when I say it, it seems like I'm an asshole or this is something that, in fact, I actually want to have a whole episode on not even just dating people's exes, but how people
ownership of people.
Yes, the ownership of people and how people will cancel you because you've had relations with mm-hmm. people that you know. It's like, why is that so much of an issue? I won't say I don't understand it, but it comes from a place of possession. It comes from a place of, I don't even want to call it insecurity. I hate when I hear bro code. It's like, what do you mean bro code? And you know, that's what the very thing is. It's always the woman who bears the brunt of this, right? And then what happens more often than not in today's world is, it's not that the guy will say, oh, because my friend dated you or my friend, I'll stop sleeping with you, but they will now treat you as one secret. Some kind of pariah. You understand? One secret. And it's like, oh no, I can't date you. I cannot marry. Although there's some people who don't care. You know, love wins. They're going to, they'll just come out
funny and enough, explain. One of the weirder reasons I found that people don't want you to date their exes is because their exes have their secrets, their secret fetishes and kinks. And they don't want you to find out about that.
And then they don't want you to be discussing them But one thing I hear that guys are afraid of is they don't want their current babe to be up for discussion with other guys. Because you know how men are stupid and talk. And next thing you say, oh yeah, it is my babe. But then my guy is coming to tell everybody how they've seen my ass with this one and that one. So I guess, you know, with the current climate, it might be difficult for people to chest those kind of conversations.
But you have to, like,
you know, but you
happiness
know.
Is too... It's too elusive. Fam,
you know, do you understand? It's like, is it your ego or is it the person?
The person got pre-vetted. Yeah, vetted the person.
Are you willing to lose this person over what your friends will say? But, you know, I mean, I guess a lot of people, you would be surprised as to how much what people say keeps many Nigerians. I mean, even this entire podcast, we're like, how are you talking about sex so openly? What if this person, what? So, like, why really, God will release Nigerians from the shackles of hope. Amen.
Okay. Let's just fingers crossed.
Let's just jump. What's your take on open relationships?
I'm poly, so.
So I mean, I already kind of knew the answer. That's why I was like asking you these. I just tell me. Oh, I like this. Tell me one thing people would never guess about you. You have an OnlyFans.
Let me see. I think one thing people would never guess about me is that one of my fetishes is feet.
Feet.
Yes. I like toes.
Like toes. Okay. Yes.
In my mouth.
I mean, once you said feet, I was already imagining you eating somebody's feet. And fair enough, Shia. Nigeria is country.
Because there is a direct line between feet and, you know, the cooch. And if you do it right, you know, stroke and suck.
Stroke and suck. I love that. Hashtag stroke and suck. You see, you went on my face. I got you. But anyway, okay, let's jump into the topic of the day. Today we're talking about stigmatization, right?
Yes. And not just stigmatization. We're talking about the dichotomy of stigmatization versus being lost in the sauce.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. Stigmatization, but as a broad concept, because, you know, the opposite of it is, like you said, lost in the sauce or being... pussy whipped, as a lot of people say. And I'll open the floor to you and jump in when necessary.
Okay, so I think that first of all, I think that we should think of these terms as gender neutral.
Yeah.
Like, stigmatization is not restricted to men or women.
Yeah.
And being lost in sauce is not restricted either. And I think it's important that we discuss stigmatization versus being lost in the sauce, because generally this is something that we shy away from. We're very, very afraid of talking about it. Nobody wants to seem as vulnerable or as weak or as beholden to anybody. So for the most part, we all like to pretend
that we're happy. Now I've been depressed.
Like we like to pretend. We like to pretend that, you know, that we have our shit together, that we can walk out of any relationship or any situationship. But there are so many of us who have this one person that all he needs to do is just kind of wink in your direction. They're like, how high? How late? Is it 3 a.m.? What's 3 a.m.? 3:15? Let's have it. So, there are people.
So, I'm flashing back like mad.
So, there are people who we have this very visceral reaction to for very different reasons. And so, what I consider stigmatization generally is when you have good sex, which is what we've talked about in the past. I remember you saying that, you know, when you have good sex, it actually changes you. And I think that it changes you on a brain chemistry level. Of like, course. It shows you that your body is capable of things that you otherwise did not know. And once you experience that, it's like addiction, dopamine. You want more of it. Like,
you constantly want more of it. You just have to settle for less than that. It's like, bro, I know this level of pleasure and enjoyment exists. You now want to give me... But this is why some people argue, like, this is why people want women who are sexually inexperienced, because they want to say that, you know, if she's not so experienced, the likelihood that she has had like amazing sex is low. So she'll be satisfied with the mediocre dick you want to give her.
That's why we are making this dichotomy of digmatization versus being lost in the sauce.
Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of try to define both concepts because they are very complementary concepts, because at the core of it, it means that something, you have a sexual experience that changes your understanding of sex and essentially elevates your experience. And because of that, you want to have more of it, specifically with the person who was the, you know, instigator. And so why this is different is that with digmatization is about skill and performance. Essentially, there's this concept where if you do something for 10,000 hours, you become a master at it. And so apply that to sex. If you, there are certain people who have certain
tools. How many days is 10,000 hours? You go fuck tire.
No.
No, but I get it. I love that.
So it's like if you, for example, there are certain people who have certain tools, like, you know, I have a big penis. I have a, you know, a very prehensile tongue, magic fingers. And you kind of figure out that, like, okay, I have this thing and I want to learn how to use it. And if you put in the hours and you get progressively better at it, you get to a point where you become a master. And once you are put in a position with another person where you can perform these skills, you will elicit a similar response every single time, because you understand, like, it's like I think one of the things I always tell people about sex is that, especially missionary, is that find your angle. Find your, like, literally do the physics of it. Okay, so this person is like 5'8", I am 6'2". It means that I have to have like 3 inches of elevation on the hip, you know, so that
no, when sex I is stroke, a skill.
Yeah, it's
sure.
a skill. So if you put in
almost
the science,
in mathematics, 3 inches on elevation, but true.
Yeah,
true.
So if you have, if you understand your, like, your body, your organs, and you understand how best to position yourself and use your stroke, you're going to get, you're going to elicit a response every single time. And once you are able to do that, once you're able to get to that level of skill, you become a digmatizer. There are some men in this Lagos, and there are some women as well. There are some women who they call them the throat goat. It's not because, you know, they are, they're skilled.
You gotta,
like,
learn it.
For example, I think one of the things that people don't really appreciate about, like, throat goats is that they essentially master the gag reflex. And that takes skill. And, like, same thing for men, same thing for women. Once you learn to that level of skill, all you just need is a stage. Give me a stage and I will perform. And once you perform that consistently, people come to expect that level of skill from you, and you become a digmatizer, and people become digmatized because they go, they see you work. They see you go to work as a maestro.
Best eater.
And you do that several times, and they have to go back to mediocrity. And so you become, like, you know, the person that, you know, they have just have you as A on the phone book. And they know that, you know, when they want to remember what it feels like to have good sex, they call you. And so that's like a digmatizer. And that's the concept of being digmatized. When somebody's skill essentially shows you that, you know, with this person, I don't have to do a lot of work. They will figure it out and they will give me pleasure. Now, lost in the sauce, or rather, let's call it the sauce, on the other hand, is instinctive. It is intrinsic to a person. So there are two types of people who are who have sauce. So one type is a person who is so in tune with their self. And when I say in tune with their self, I mean they are not misogynistic towards themselves. They are not homophobic towards themselves. They are not patriarchal towards themselves. They are able to say, these are my needs. This is what I want. This is what I like. I like to moan when I'm, like, when I'm getting railed. I like to, like, you know, deep throat. I like nipples. I like somebody to suck on my earlobe. I don't care that other people find it disgusting. This is what I like. This is what I want. And because they're so in tune with themselves, every time they have sex, they have sex from a place of prioritizing self-pleasure. And so it doesn't matter what you're doing with them. They will always
get their
own. And because they're so in tune with themselves, they're able to make space for you as well. And for those people, like, just experiencing somebody enjoy sex can be intoxicating. Like, you know, you're stroking, you're seeing this person, like, literally giving themselves to you, being fully vulnerable, that is an intoxicating experience. And when somebody, when you experience that with somebody who is so in tune with themselves,
yeah,
that there's no self-hate, there's no hesitance, there's no fear, like they're able to like communicate their needs.
Grand maestros of sex.
And so it is an intoxicating experience. So there's, yeah, there's that kind of people with that kind of sauce. And the other kind of sauce are people who have the physical attributes of sexiness. They have, yeah, like a nice ass that jiggles when they walk. They have like great titties that perk up, that you just literally see them,
mm-hmm,
and you are able to imagine what it would feel like to be with that kind of, yeah, person. And so people who are like digmatizers are on this side, people who are lost on the saucer on this side, the, mm-hmm, effect is the same, because you want to continue to like engage with this person on an intimate level,
yeah,
but how is slightly different. Mm-hmm. And making that distinction is the thing that separates you from ruin. Being able to understand that this is what I do,
mm-hmm,
and this is why I have this response from people,
mm-hmm,
is what saves a lot of people from ruin. There are a lot of people who are digmatizers, but they are so obsessed with performance that they literally will fuck anybody because they just want to show their skill.
That, yeah.
And so they're not able to connect on an emotional level with,
yeah,
you. And there's, yeah, some people who are so in tune with themselves. And so at least the people who are in tune with themselves are like, those are the peak, because they are able to tell when institution doesn't work for them and, mm-hmm, move out. But people who are just sexy, and because of that, they attract people, they tend to get into a lot of trouble,
mm,
because they don't really, they're not really in control of who they attract.
Mm.
And so for the most part, because a lot of women experience that where they go out and all sorts of men just move to them.
You attract everybody,
and
to be honest.
That kind of attraction, it doesn't matter. It wears you down. Because if you attract a certain kind of man over and over, you're going to start to ask yourself, what am I doing? What am I putting out into the world? And you just will realize that you just have a specific kind of sauce.
Yeah.
That, because think about it, like 20 years ago, what was considered sexy, mm-hmm, is so vastly different from what is considered,
yeah,
sexy now.
Yeah.
So people who had sauce then, now they are thinking,
really, yeah,
what happened? Like, why don't I have sauce
like, it's
anymore?
So funny, because there was a time where having a fat ass was a bad thing.
Yes.
Like, the whole, oh, do these pants make my ass look fat, was a negative thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to the era of boob jobs and everybody liking, you know, big titties and the P shape, you know, still flat ass and big boobs. And then now we're in this Insta bad bitch era where everybody's doing BBLs,
yep,
and all of that stuff. And I wonder what the next shift is going to be.
Like, I really hope that people who are on that side of the sauce spectrum are like, have support, because, mm-hmm, it can be very dysmorphic, mm-hmm, and disorienting for, yeah, you to be desired so much for one, mm, thing that you didn't really have anything to do with.
Yeah.
You just kind of were born with it, or you had to hit puberty and all of a sudden,
yeah,
you're hot. I think a lot of young women experience that. Nobody's looking at you, and all of a sudden your titties go from a B to a D, and everybody's, mm, like, ah.
Yeah.
You're like, where is this coming from? Where is, mm. So it's very important for people to have like awareness,
yeah,
of where the attraction that they are getting is coming from,
mm-hmm,
so that they are able to process who is good for me, who is not good for me.
Mm-hmm.
People who are on the digmatization spectrum and on the sauce spectrum, one of the things they first of all have to do is that they have to decide, what do I like?
Mm-hmm.
What do I want?
Mm-hmm.
What pleasures me?
Mm, you see, this is what I always say, and this is why I feel like I've said this in at least 5 episodes, where when people say, oh, my pleasure is giving you pleasure, I say that I have a problem with it, because you find that a lot of people, yes, obviously it's very easy for men to just, you know, have sex and bust and, you know, they feel like they've had a good time.
Yep.
But what it tells me is, you don't really know what you like. You don't really know what gives you pleasure. Like, yes, you might be getting pleasure because, I mean, everybody wants to pleasure people, the, mm-hmm, the partners that they're,
yes,
with. But there's also that if most of your pleasure is hinged on providing pleasure to another person,
mm-hmm,
then you need to ask yourself where that is coming from. Like, yes, obviously, there's the aspects of seeing the reactions, but is it tied to your ego? Is it tied to you feeling like, yes, I'm doing a right job, or I'm doing a good job,
mm-hmm,
and my performance is being rated highly by their pleasure? Is that why, you know, your neurons are firing? You know, because it's like, what do you like? What parts of your bodies do you like being touched? You know, all of those kind of things. So, so that's one thing. And then I'll take us back to what you said about people who have the sauce because of how, you know, they look.
Present.
So there are two sides to it. There's that bit of, I understand what it's like when people, a lot of people think when someone is desired, that it is all
exhilarating.
It is irritating and disgusting and annoying because, and you know, and I feel like that's why I've always found that phrase, you are what you attract, stupid and a lie, mm-hmm. because you attract everybody in this yes. world. There are just certain people that attract all sorts. And so you yourself, you have to kind of know one, you have to be extra strict. Your filters have to be high. You have to know what you like and you have to raise your standards as well. And I always tell people, like, that's how I know the game is shit. You know, having the pick of the litter, I can say that, yes, almost everybody. And it's like having the highest of the highs, the lowest of the lows, it doesn't change anything. Like, sometimes people think, oh, yeah, because you're desired and so many men are moving to you, yeah. it makes it easier. It makes it harder and it makes you see that the streets, masses in the streets, they ain't shit, honestly. Then there's also the aspect of, as you said, when people who are desired, they think that that's all they need to bring to the sexual table because, mm-hmm. well, yeah, everybody's chasing, everybody wants to have sex with you and stuff. It doesn't mean that you should now become a pillow princess yes. or you should just lay there and stuff. You need to also apply yourself. At the end of the day, yes, you can have the fast ass. Yes, you can have the nice titties. Yes, you can have all the, you can have the big dick as well. Mm-hmm. You can be tall, you can be this, but how is your skill set translating into the sex that you're having as yes. well? And are you also prioritizing your pleasure, or are you just happy that, you know, are you just happy to be there? It's like, oh yeah, they desire me and their desire is, you know, participate. I think mm-hmm. that's just a thing. A lot of people are not so participative in sex. And it's like when you spoke about people who are like self-assured and like, you know, people who have the sauce mm-hmm. and they're also, I mean, I like that you said they also make space for the other person.
Yes.
Because if you're also after your own and after your own, you can be selfish to the point where you're like, you know what? I don't need you to. Mm-hmm. I already know the angles or I know how yes. to move and stuff. And you don't want to do that to the point where the person will feel like you're using them as like a sex doll or a mm-hmm. sex toy. So you actually also have to, you know, get into the moment yes, and you see do. The other person.
Because well. it's, and so the thing about like stigmatization and being lost in the sauce, one of the reasons why we're so ashamed when we're stigmatized or when we're lost in somebody's sauce as a recipient is because we know on an intrinsic level that what we have is an infatuation. Mm-hmm. We're infatuated with the other person. Mm-hmm. We don't really love them. Mm-hmm. We don't really have like a deep emotional connection to them. Yeah. It's a very physical, a very visceral yeah. reaction to what is being done to us or what yeah. we're experiencing. Yeah. And so because of that, we feel some kind of shame because we feel like we should be more control of ourself, mm-hmm. of our impulses, our urges. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so to have somebody who you are willing to set aside your boundaries, set aside your principles, just for access.
Set aside your shame.
Just for access to them can be very humiliating.
Yeah.
And I feel like part of the reason why it's very important to discuss this from like a anthropological level is so that we can deal with the shame. Because stigmatization, especially, sauce is a little trickier, mm-hmm. but stigmatization is literally the result of performance,
yeah.
which means that if that person can reach that level of skill, mm-hmm. so can you.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to apply yourself,
yeah.
which is why you need to be sex positive. Let's start with that. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not sex positive, mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to say, okay,
open your mouth, yeah. I want this, I want that.
It can
this.
Be very embarrassing, of you know, course. In a sexual situation to say, oh yeah, this angle is not working for me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try this instead. Let's yeah. try that instead. Yeah. You don't want to be the fussy person mm-hmm. in those kind of situations.
Yeah.
And people who are like, people who stigmatize, they're very, very fussy.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, see, I like standing in front of the mirror at 2:30, the sun is here for me to do my best work. This yeah. is, and they prioritize for that.
Yeah.
Being able to, like, you know, prioritize your needs is very important. And so to just kind of segue a bit, let me talk a bit more about like stigmatization.
Mm-hmm.
Because stigmatization is a situation of performance and like skill, people who are skilled stigmatizers, and this is where it kind of dips a little into manipulation,
mm-hmm.
stroke abuse.
That was what I was going to say. I was going to say, God help you if a stigmatizer is also someone who abuses you.
Yes.
Because living is going to be extra hard.
It is going to be hard. And so, like, on their own end,
mm-hmm.
on like a stigmatizer's end, they have to play a very tricky game.
Yeah.
It has to be a game of access and boundaries. They are mm-hmm. constantly balancing access and boundaries because yeah. when you approach sex from a place of skill, mm-hmm. it requires effort, physical effort and emotional effort. Mm-hmm. Intimacy, even intimacy in casual sex, requires emotional labor because you must pretend to be into the other person,
or at least
deceive yourself. Like, I call it pretend, but it's deceiving yourself. Mm-hmm. Even in casual sex, yeah, we're attracted to a person, but intimacy requires some level of vulnerability.
Yeah.
Good sex requires some level of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And even in casual situations, which is why a lot of casual sex ends up in
McDonald's. Because, yeah, I feel like there's definitely a balancing act. And I always say, I don't know why. Sometimes I don't blame men when they are they're strict with their boundaries when it comes to a casual partner. But I don't believe, like, I believe in being nice to your casual partner. I think that, in fact, if you had a sustainable partner for a long time, there are certain things. Your casual partner should be somebody who you can hit up and they should be able to help you. They should be able to farm on Val's Day. Send gifts, bro. Like, if you guys are fucking raw, if a nigga is fucking you raw and he doesn't get you anything for Valentine's Day, you have to remove him from your rotation straight. I don't care. It doesn't have to be.
Even if you're not going to get a gift, acknowledge
it. Do you understand? Acknowledge it. They don't just ghost and come back on the 13th. Like, fam, send cupcakes that say thank you for the great sex. Send a card. Send a scroll. Do something, but just don't disappear. Because people say, oh, no, I don't want her to get confused. But it's like every relationship is dynamic. And I also believe in continuing conversations. If somebody is catching feelings or the other person is not, it's like, okay, let's talk about it. There's no shame there, you know. But then some people just want to be assholes because they're like, oh, yeah. But the thing is, unfortunately for human beings, if somebody likes you, the more you're an asshole, the more they want you to choose them, the more they're even struggling and striving and then lying to themselves, oh, I don't really like you. No, it's just physical. But then they're getting rejection and stuff. And then sometimes if you're not careful, it can also become some sort of, I don't want to call it abusive dynamic, but toxic.
That's what I'm saying. Dynamic. So like in a stigmatizer situation, you have to balance access and boundaries, because let's even take out all these social like complications that sex brings to an equation. If I have to perform every time I see you, I have to be in the right mental state. I have to, you know, we have to, like, as we talked about before, the environment has to be right, the ambience has to be right, all of those things. It takes work, it takes money, it takes time, it takes attention. So the person who's been stigmatized, they are thinking, I want this level of sex every single time, twice a week, three times a week. The person who is stigmatizing is thinking, I can only bring myself mentally to this place once a week.
Mm.
And so they often have to, like, you know, give you enough access that you feel, okay, this person still prioritizes me. Like, the sex matters to them.
Yeah.
The things that they've done to me, they've not introduced me to a lifestyle they can't maintain.
And so I hate that shit. I actually hate that shit. Like, me, do you know what I'm saying? I'm like, please, I don't want after work, tired, eat, sleep, bath. Come on, bring your best work, bro.
Like, bring your best. So you have to be very stigmatized.
Like, because that's, we know why you're here. Nobody wants your, I don't want your poor performance. My guy shouted at me, I only have 40% battery left. Nah, go home, bath, eat, sleep, and come.
Exactly. So you have to do the access and boundaries thing. Boundaries in the sense that, yeah, I don't want love.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a love situation.
Yeah.
And it can be the fact that there's no love or there's no, like, road to love doesn't mean that the relationship cannot be civil.
Yeah,
doesn't mean that it cannot be thoughtful, empathic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It can be all those things. And I think that one of the things that good stigmatizers do is that they are consistent. You know.
That, of consistency.
You know that, first of all, the sex is going to be at least between 75% to 100% every single time. And one of the things that they do really, really well is that when you message, they respond on time, politely. And if they cannot attend to you at that time, they apologize, genuine apology, and then they reschedule. A good stigmatizer has manners. They are always polite. They always respond to your messages, because one of the things that really brings shame into those stigmatizer situations is when the person does like not respond to you with politeness.
Because you made a bitch and then
because
they now give
you have to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Like once you're stigmatized, you get into the place of vulnerability. And to message somebody over and over where it's like, oh, I want, because the, for the
asking
stigmatizer,
for sex alone,
it's about
already,
skill.
Yeah.
It's like, it's because it's skill for them. They're not really like sure, they like you. They enjoy your company,
but they have to be
in
the mood
love
for
with you.
The
yes,
the,
and so you often have to initiate, and initiating and getting like, you know, turned down rudely or having your messages ignored for 12 hours. That's very bad etiquette if you're going to be a dictatizer. You have to come correct.
He said, "With great power comes great responsibility."
No, it is. It's a performance thing. Like, you have shown them a lifestyle, and least you can do. Is be respectful. Mm-hmm. Also, reschedule if you want to phase out. You phase out with a proper conversation. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of diminishing returns that always, with every kind of performance, with every kind of performance-based situation, law of diminishing returns eventually comes in.
Yeah,
some people are lucky that they can always peak and they can find ways to continue to stay interested.
Yeah.
But for most people, let's say it peaks for them around like the 10th, 15th time. And after that time, it kind of becomes a chore rather than something super interesting, especially if it's not progressing into like an intimate relationship. And so law of diminishing returns comes in, and a good stigmatizer would then have an exit interview with you.
Mm.
Explain to you that, oh yeah, you know,
what is this?
I'm not emotionally in
utopia,
where
do they exist?
No,
I
but,
mean, those
but
people
it is
do,
possible.
You know, people,
and
of course,
I feel like if
that.
we say it out loud, people might listen
and
realize that
it.
There is
it,
because literally you have rewired this person's brain chemistry. I'm sorry, you're responsible. Like, no matter how you want to, you know,
people that are not responsible for the people that they're dating, are these the ones that will be. I mean, but to be fair, it does go both ways as well, because it's not just like a man and you know, whoever. It's also like
sometimes because
it could be any dynamic.
Some women are like, I feel like when men stigmatize because it's already the social expectation that men will do the work in sex.
Yeah,
women can't take it. When a woman stigmatizes, when a woman, like, you know, basically is like, okay, you know what? You never had car sex before. Don't worry. I have experience with car sex. I'm going to teach you a thing or two. And then you have all the euphoria from, I could possibly get caught. This is so transgressive.
Yeah.
And this woman is basically like turning your car into like a studio and you're moving things around, pushing things. That, and after everything, you do all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You experience the orgasm. Everything goes well. It's a lot harder for a man to admit that, damn, this woman has shown me things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this woman knows her body, knows my body, knows how to essentially extract what she wants from me.
Yeah.
And I want that again. So it's a lot harder, which is why it's
very
important
for people to be polite. I feel like for men, it goes... So many things happen in that moment when you realize that a woman has the upper hand sexually.
She has the
as
skill.
Well.
Like.
And the skill. So one, I hate that where most men's mind will go to is, where did she learn that one?
Yes.
How did she learn how to do that? Then you also don't want to admit and you don't want to be vulnerable and you don't want to feel like this person is controlling you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like what ends up happening is you have a lot of passive aggressive behavior.
Resentment.
Like, how dare you? How dare you extract my seed with such skill? Who gave you the gorilla grip? And then, you know, you now start to pass on judgment to that person, but you still find that they still won't release that person as well.
They won't.
So, yeah.
And so, like, thank God you even mentioned that, because when women are stigmatizers, it's often because they are skilled in the kinks and fetishes that a lot of men are not even willing to admit to themselves that they're good at. Like, the woman who is a... like, she's a god at nipple play and gets you to come from nipple play, and you're just like, wow, so my titties can do that. Like, and to even, like, you can't even have the conversation with your friends, because, like, when she made you nut from, like,
yeah, they wouldn't even want
nipples.
To exactly
and
they
so you,
even
you
want
feel
to admit that
first of all you
like
feel
that.
Very alone in that kind of situation, because you're like, this is a specific skill. I can't go to my 16 other girlfriends and say, oh, suck my nipple. That's what they're like, which nipple? What?
Exactly.
Like, did you shave it?
Not to mention if it's like ass play or some, you know, deeper level of kink and stuff.
And so things like that. So it's very important for everybody to be polite.
Yeah.
Like, be polite, have manners, approach this from a place of etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because you are a performer. Accept that if I'm a digmatizer, I'm a performer. Like, I have hit a certain skill set, a skill level, and like, not even just like, even in the sex, because even the foreplay, like, there are some people who, they are so skilled that literally from the first conversation, they are already fucking your mind.
Yeah,
they are fucking with your mind. You. Like, they are prepping and priming. Right, like, you will ask by yourself, by the time they finish with you, like, even just like dirty talk.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people who, they have practiced, they have rehearsed. What do I say? How do I read these cues? What is... And so it is imperative for you to be polite if you're going to be a digmatizer, which is what we're talking about, skill here.
Yeah.
But for people who have sauce, sauce is a lot trickier.
Yeah.
Especially for people who are like sexually liberated or who have become very attuned to their own bodies.
Yeah.
For those kind of people, first of all, they don't really... Every sexual experience feels unique. Mm. With performance-based, like, digmatization, it can feel routine but good. But with a person who has sauce, sauce is so... It's spiritual, almost.
Mm,
because
sure.
It kind of shows you what is possible if you didn't have this hang-up or that hang-up. Because they're doing things to you, but they are also letting you do things to them.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are you being taught how to please them, you're also being taught what pleases you.
Yeah.
Yes. And because they're not doing it from a place of performance, people have mutual discovery. Like, you're both excited to, like, discover each other. And every time you're discovering each other, it can feel very intoxicating, very heady. And so... People that have sauce often, they are the ones that often have the thing like slide into love. Even they themselves, they're like, am I in love with this person? Am I not? Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
I know that I have this, like, whenever we fuck, it feels like I've it known does. Him for my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, yeah, no, it's not. You didn't know. It's you.
Mm.
It's not him.
Yeah.
It's you. And you have to be responsible about that. Don't be putting that shit out into the world. Mm. Like, there are people, they're like, if you leave me, I will kill myself.
I'll kill you too.
And yeah, like, but it's just a bit. No, it's just not. Just it's not just a babe. They've never felt that accepted in their lives. There's nowhere else where they feel that accepted, because you're literally physically naked and you're vulnerable. And this person is like, you have this session where, you know, everything's just like deep strokes for 2 hours, and you have this session where people just kiss for 45 minutes, and both feel equally important, both feel equally intimate, both feel equally like transcendental. But this person is just living her life, or he's just living his life. Like, it's not that, you know, it's because you are so, like, you know, evolved, or it's because they are so in tune with themselves that they give you permission to be a little more in tune with yourself.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. First of all, people just need to realize that it's not you, it's them. Accepting that this is how this person is allows you to approach them from a place of, yeah, I'm coming for a spiritual experience. This person is like a goddess or a god. You know, you come, you worship, you dust your legs, you go home. You don't try to pack into the temple.
Is that belong to you? Pack into the temple, look. Gas pack. I'm leaving there.
This space for other people to enter.
This is now a one-man church.
This space for other people to enter. No, seriously, this space for other people to enter, because...
Where are you going?
Because with those kind of people, if you try to sequester them...
Yeah, possession
on that ship. You will, first of all, they will not... They might not even resist you, but you will lose the spark because... It's not consensual anymore. There becomes like a policing, and, you know, are you present? Are you 100%? And it's like, I want you to do this thing that you did that time again. Do it, as opposed to, okay, let's flow into this thing together. So if you are lost in the sauce, because the thing with lost in the sauce, which again is this thing about access and boundaries, is very important, because if somebody has too many boundaries, even as a stigmatizer or somebody with sauce, if there are too many boundaries, it will force like a cold turkey withdrawal. You will have time to yourself. You will go through all the stages of grief, and then you come out in recovery. You recover from that person eventually. And so if you want to keep that person around, you have to balance the access and the.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's important that if you meet somebody with sauce, approach them from a place of, this is a spiritual experience.
Yeah,
I'm not in control. They are not in control. We are on this journey together. Mm-hmm. Whenever the journey takes us, we'll get there, we'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
And whenever we need to part, we part.
Yeah.
Like people that have sauce are the ones that have exes from 2002. They're still like, oh God, that girl.
Yes. Yeah, I'm
sorry.
It'd be like that 15. Sometimes. It'd be, you know, like that sometimes. Forgot,
I, like, I always think about Kemi all the time. And it's like, you know, if Kemi says yes today, I'm sorry, my wife, my children. And so, yeah, sauce is spiritual.
What would you say you are? Do you think you're a deep massager or?
No, I think I'm a sauce person.
Sauce.
I'm a sauce person. Yeah. Like, I'm a sauce person because I am. I am sure that I'm a sauce person. Yeah. I'm a sauce person because I went through a very weird teenage phase. Mm. I was a goth as a teenager. So all of the things that people like found weird, I kind of embraced about myself.
Yeah.
And going through that, embracing was also embracing, I like sex.
Yeah.
And I like sex from a anthropological point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I want to understand myself. I want to understand why sex feels good.
Yeah.
I want to understand why, you know, some people might like sniffing armpits and some people might like sniffing crotches.
Mm-hmm.
And why that doesn't really make them weird. Just makes them different.
Mm-hmm.
And so doing all of that work has allowed me to, like, you know, approach sex from a place of, it doesn't matter how good or how bad that person is. I am here to give and receive pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, as long as I am participating, I'm participating from a place of, let's get the best out of this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't do that. A lot of people do come with so many expectations and they're like, oh, you know, you said this when we were 16 and we did this and we did that. In fact, because of that, part of the reason why I don't, like, I can sext, but I don't sext because I find that sexting does expectations.
In,
so I want people to come in.
Open,
so
for
I think I'm more of a, what sauce of you? Guy. I know you are a sauce person. Yeah, it's pressing,
but you know, I mean, my reflections and rise above accountability era, and I definitely am not the same person with everybody. I'm sure there are certain people that will say this one not dogmatizer. Mm-hmm. Of course, there will be a few people who are like, I definitely resonate more with the source bit, but I'm also somebody who doesn't give everyone that kind of access to me.
Yes.
And I'm also someone who comes with expectations with other people, but more from a, I have this skill sets. I have this, you know, I know what I can get out of an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not ready to, and it's a resistance I've noticed in myself, and I'm not sure exactly where it comes from, but I think that I've always kind of been like that. I can be very all or nothing sometimes. I can be very, you know, the best, or I don't want to. I remember even growing up, I used to tell myself, getting something perfectly and working to make something perfect, they are as good as each other. But I'm more like, because I like, you know, I'm someone who would choose a relationship with somebody where from the moment I met you, I knew we had that instant connection, instant energy over like growing to build. Same way I used to say I didn't believe in growing to love, or, you know, I would always choose the electric, unexplainable, not logical. Do you get, like, so I resonate.
Sauce.
Yeah, exactly. So I resonate more with sauce, but I also feel like sauce is sacred and like you can't access that with like everyone. Like, yes, at the end of the day, it can be great, but it's like, if you have been in a position where there are two sauce masters saucing, oh my God. like when I say transcendental, so for me, it's like, when you already know that, you know, imagine you come with your sauce, there's always there, you want to bring dogmatizer energy. I just like, get this, like, get
like,
out of here.
But I feel like a sauce person with a, like, a polite, self-aware dogmatizer is a fire combination.
No, for sure. So for sure. So I always say that I think that there are different levels to, you know, like, to sex, and why sometimes I always say, oh, if I'm in love with you, there's certain things that always go. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, when I talk about what kind of sex, I always say, like, I like when you, like, my best is when you can switch between sensual and acrobatic. Yeah. And so, like, what you've described as the digmatizer, the performer, I guess is what I have always described as the acrobatic.
Yeah.
Not just in terms of, like, oh, you can carry, you can flip, you can do this, but, like, having the techniques and stuff. But mm-hmm. you know how there are certain people who have all of the skill sets. They know what to do. They know all the, but
there's no soul.
Yeah, there's no soul. There's no soul. There's a soul connection that's missing.
There's no soul.
So that person can never be like the top of my lead. Like, I can't marry someone like that.
Yeah.
Where I know that we don't have, like, so you can be number two for years. Like, because I know when I need that animalistic, like, need mm-hmm. and stuff, like, on a shallow level. Yeah. But I know that I didn't have a spiritual experience. I know that there are certain type of goosebumps I did not have during that encounter
mm-hmm.
because you're just there about the performance. For you, sex is mainly a pleasure thing, and there's no connection there.
Yeah.
There's that physical connection, but we're not, our souls are not merging and dancing and jumping out of each other's bodies mm-hmm. and doing, you know, going back and forth with each other. So you're not having that, like, deep exchange. And so I think for me, I just compartmentalize. Like, mm-hmm. like, I feel like the grandmaster would definitely be somebody who, in every encounter, you can take charge. And like you said,
yes.
I will receive what I can receive from this, and I will give what I can give from mm-hmm. this. But I'm very stingy with my energy, depending on how I feel about yes. you. I'm just that one. I've realized that that's the kind of person I am. I'm very self. If I don't like you like this, I can be so selfish. If you like your nipples, that's my own business. I'm going to focus on what I can get out of that situation, like what I know I already like. Like, I don't really care too much. That's why I said some people would definitely call me digmatizer. Mm-hmm. Like, we know that you're going to get your nerves and yes. all of that stuff, but I'm not going to give so much to you, mm-hmm. you get, because I'm not trying to get too much out of you. We already know it's already like a good 8 yeah. over 10, but it's not entering another realm. But and
so,
I'm okay
so
with
that.
So
that's the interesting thing about yeah. this. The interesting thing about it is that most digmatizers struggle with emotional connection.
Hmm.
And they struggle with emotional connection because to even become a digmatizer, you have to first of all realize I have a limited skill set.
Mm.
And I have to make the most of the limited skill set.
Yeah.
And doing that, often, like, people start to feel like body parts to you.
Mm.
You don't really see them as a whole. You yeah. see them as body parts.
Yeah.
And you kind of focus on the things that you're good at,
mm.
as opposed to just letting the situation move.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And so that's like a flaw that's digmatizes and something that they can overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, people with sauce, especially people that have sauce because body, like they are relying on the body, as they say.
Yeah.
People that have sauce because they have the body.
No one's often, apply themselves.
It's not even just that they don't apply themselves.
Skills?
It's also that, no, so it's not even that. It's that people like that often have a problem of when they finally meet the person that they are attracted to, because they attract so many people.
Yeah.
When they meet somebody that they are attracted to and the person has some kind of small attraction to them, they kind of expect to have like a deep, intimate, ancient connection where it's yeah. like, you know, soulmates, we're going to be together forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it rarely happens like that.
It's not always the case.
Mm. And so they are often really, really disappointed. Like they suffer a lot of disappointment. So on one end, this person cannot connect emotionally. The other end, this person, every time they meet somebody that they are not just receiving attention, that they have a mm-hmm. connection to,
yeah.
they expect fireworks.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, you know, where with the performance person, they would like build up to
build
whatever
up.
It is.
Yeah.
And so everybody has that. It's not like, it's not balanced
yeah,
on each side.
Yeah, no, I mean, as with like anything where they used to like describe, you know, behaviors or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, no one is ever fully 100%. Yes. You can always find elements of, you know, it's,
yeah,
I feel like it's more about spectrums.
Yes,
yeah,
the spectrum.
And, you know, where you are on each one. But I think that, yeah, there's definitely something to learn from like each side
mm-hmm.
and, you know, what your own sexual behavior is like, how
yes.
you've learned to be, you know, a certain way. And that thing about, because you're so good, I feel like a lot of men are also guilty of this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're so good, in quotes, at what you do, you just start, it becomes your personality where you're just knocking off,
yeah,
yeah, I did this one, I made that bus, I made that skirt, I made that design. And it's like, where's your connection? It's like you said, that's, you know, lack of emotional connection
mm-hmm.
to the sex that you're
can
having.
Can you gauge where they need to be at this point in time? As opposed to where you think they must be every single time. Like, your standards are not their standards. Especially for dogmatizers. Your standards are not their standards. And sometimes you have to meet them where they are. Meet them at the skill level they are. Like, that's something that I think I've had to learn over the years. That, yes, you might be good. And this is a people with big dick problem. The fact that you've met that one source. No, I'm not saying anything personally. This is like a general thing. Just because you met that one source babe that was able to just like enter into her yoni zone and didn't just open and it's like 10 inches, 11 inches. So yeah, let's go. Doesn't mean that every babe is going to be able to
collect your like, 10 inches.
You might have to do like 3 hours of foreplay with somebody else and still not get the dick. And you have to end that encounter with both of you happy.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to recalibrate, restructure.
I mean, I guess it depends on how, because I'm, like I said, compartmentalizer, and you know, I'm sorry, like I can't see myself bringing that much openness to every encounter or that much care. And I guess that's where my selfishness and wickedness also comes in, you know, it's like, because if I have to now start thinking of you and caring for you, like for it to be a saucy, saucy level where it's like I'm applying myself and all, I'm also taking into account your feelings, you know? And it's how I always joke about how, okay, when I'm done with certain people, pack your bags and get the fuck out. Because in those settings, I have put those people in a place where, how about this? You want to be dogmatized? What's going on? You know, I put them in a certain level where I just don't care about their emotions. Like, it's like, it's not like I started out wanting to. I just don't have the capacity. And I'm not willing to even be open to caring. But, you know, there's that side of me that is like, you should, like, it's not like, obviously, I'm not an asshole. You can eat, you can chill, you can, you know, all of that stuff. You're, like, I'm but friendly with certain people. But the duty of care people. Where you,
like...
But yes, you should have a duty of care.
I think I understand what you're
people.
Trying to say. Like, so the duty of care in a stigmatizer stroke sore situation is not just like, you know, okay, after sex, we do this, that. It's also that you have to kind of reassure them that you are still valid as a person. Like, your personhood has not been violated by this situation.
I don't want to reassure you now. Next thing, you want to move into my house and fall in love. That's the thing about, like, boundaries, right? And where it can be really tricky.
Yeah.
It's like, sometimes it's like, I remember this meme I saw where they said, I'm not flirting, I'm just hot and talking.
Yes.
Where, you know, you just do small and, you know, people want to die inside. They...
that's
the problem.
Like, she's talking like a sauce person. Like, it's a sauce problem.
What is the problem? It's like, to you, you're trying to be a dogmatizer, but to them, they're getting lost in the sauce. And it's like, that's not why we're here, you know? So I think, I mean, it's definitely a point of reflection in terms of, like, sexual behavior and thinking about, you know, people that you've had and how you should approach sexual situations as well. I definitely believe that, you know, yes, you can have sex just for fun and stuff, but I also still believe that there should be a duty of care with whatever partner.
Yes.
And, you know, it also takes a very, like, self-assured, like, being in charge of your sex life where you can be the one to dictate, okay, this, that, and third. Mm-hmm. You find that so many women aren't even at that place where they are dictating, I want this, I want this, I want that. They are the ones on speed dial. It's like, you can't always, and this is why I always try to push women to take charge of their sex lives, because you can't always just be waiting for someone to choose you or pick the best of what comes at you, because everybody will come with their own energy. And if you don't know who you are sexually, it's like, you could be the source, but you're allowing someone try, that's not even a dogmatizer, that's to try to dogmatize you, because it feels like, oh yeah, you're just a babe. Let me just come and learn, give you what I learned on Pornhub. And nobody is even having like a great time or a good situation. And so, yeah, like, I mean, this is it's definitely, definitely a lot to think about as well. I definitely like the aspects of, and it kind of reminds me of kink situations or like BDSM as well, where it's like, even as a dominant, you have that duty of care to yourself.
Yes.
Where no matter what you're doing to them, they must always be consenting. They must always be safe. You must always have their, even if you're getting pleasure out of it, you must always have their own best interests at heart. And I think that if a lot of us have this approach to sexual situations, we would be in trouble less, because it's like, I care about my own and I'm here for my pleasure, but I also care about you and I want to make sure you're having pleasure. I want to make sure you're feeling safe. I want you to leave this situation as fulfilled as, you know, I have left or I am leaving. But there's also only so much you can do for the other person if they're just there as a doormat or there waiting for you to give everything. Like, so no one can pour the self-assurance into you. Like, if you're already coming from an insecure situation, like, it's like, if you're someone who on a normal, you're very self-assured about, like, sex or even asking for sex, it's always like, if they, your dickmatizer doesn't even reply in 12 hours, your instant, you know, reaction is, oh, I'm ashamed, oh, I asked, this person aired me and stuff. You also give them that grace, okay, they might be working, this, that. You also have to be able to self-soothe, but then you don't want to be with an asshole, or you don't want to be in a situation where it can be abusive, or it's toxic, or it's like, okay, yes, you know, sauce and stigmatization, all of that stuff is all fun and games, but what is the sexual dynamic as well?
I think this are they treating you? This is why I think it's important that we're even talking about this, because I think that there's the duty of care from the dickmatizer or the person with the sauce, but there's also the responsibility of the person who is receiving all of this attention to insist on basic protocol, which, you know, the fancy people will call boundaries, but basic protocol. I feel like it's important to say, yeah, this was a very, sorry, or to admit that this was a different experience for me.
Yeah.
It was not like everybody else. This happened. I have never done this before. This has never happened to me before. And it happened because it's with you. So what does this mean?
What next?
Sometimes we are too obsessed with being like, oh, you know, can't see me weak. Like, you can't embarrass, especially, and I think this happens more with digmatizers, because a digmatizer generally, how digmatizers work is that from the beginning you underestimate them. Your expectations are blown out of the water, and then you now have to recalibrate. First of all, you have to recalibrate in the sense that you have to apologize for underestimating them, even if you didn't verbalize it.
Yeah.
There's often a little bit of chasing that goes on with digmatizers before we get there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of the reason why when eventually
they
floor you, they have like a high about it. Of course. Like, oh yeah, so yeah, you underestimated me and I showed you. And so you have to admit that, yes, I'm sorry for underestimating you.
Mm.
I'm sorry that, you know...
Sorry about what? You did your job, okay? That's what you get sorry for.
You have to. At least if you admit it to them, then you now have grounds. You have grounds to now say tomorrow, like next week, and say, yeah, I already apologized. This is different now. Let me know if this is something we're going to be doing, if it's not, so that I can manage my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times people who are in that, they're so ashamed that, you know, they're like, shit, I squirted on his bed. Is he going to tell people? That they either, like, they just pretend that it never happened.
Yeah.
And then...
But have you seen... Yeah, and you know, that's one thing I've seen that has happened so many times. Where people run away... But I think that's a general thing. Where people run away from pleasure. Where it's like, eh, this person made me scared. I'm going to run away from him because I don't want to be lost in sauce. I don't want to be digmatized and stuff. So it's like, you now start oscillating between your desire and the shame.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to see finish and all of that stuff. And you even... start creating that toxic dynamic
by yourself. you withdraw and they know, like, sauce people, it might be more difficult for them, but a digmatizer always knows, because they know what to look for. They know when it's happening, because it's a visceral reaction. Like, your body's bucking, your eyes are rolling to the back of your head, your tone changes, they are attuned to a lot of those things. People in source people might not be attuned to it, because them to their inside, like, people are in the booth together. But a digmatizer, more often than not, they are lucid. They know what is happening. And so when that thing happens to you, the worst thing you can possibly do is pretend it didn't happen and then try to ghost them. Because when you come
back,
like, I tell people this thing, this is one of the things I say all the time, especially with sex. Whatever you're going through, go through it. Like, if you have a crush on a man or something, all those things, and you have sex for the first time and it's great and it blows your mind, if you feel even an inkling that I want to do this again, do it. Just, like, push all the shame to the side. Do it immediately. Like, ask, be vocal, say what you want.
Yeah.
Like, be as digmatized as possible.
Yes.
Because if you make the mistake, if you dare pretend, when you come back, is he finished? You'll be under the boots. Like, you will be under the boots. Like you're coming out from under the boot. So just go through it, because if you want to come get over a person,
I believe it. Like it's go like, fam, this life is about living life on the edge. But finish yourself with enjoyments and just see if you're going to see Shege.
Like, if they're going to be an asshole, you will know earlier exactly. Because you have asked directly.
No, 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 you run away from 3 months and you now come. Then it's all just messed up. Just jump inside, kill yourself. If you're tired, when you see Shege, you come out and you go again. I definitely believe that.
So, like, I know that you're a source person, but what would you consider the most annoying thing about being a source person?
The most annoying thing. Honestly, I think that it's kind of like what I highlighted before, where if I am not accessing that level of depth in that situation, one, I think that your standards are extremely high. Because you reach certain peaks when it comes to sex and sexual experiences and what you can explain. And when I try to explain these kind of things to certain people, they don't understand because they've had so much surface level sex.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, when I'm talking about this, shit will take you to another realm. Like, it's like, you know, when you have an encounter and you can literally see the energy bubble that surrounded you guys. Like, there's, do we want an energy field, like in an actual vortex of connection?
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes, you know, when you have that, when you have reached that level of peaks in that way,
mm-hmm.
you can get to the point where your expectations are really high and you're very sexually unforgiving.
Yes.
And so it's almost like you're chasing a high in every new encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, for me, I don't even bother chasing high because I can tell. Yes. If it's not up to par, get out. I'm almost not willing to build and learn. And I had to like catch myself yourself. Where it's like, okay, this is great and it can be greater just because you have or you've had experiences where it was just naturally flowy and fluid and, you know, deep. Sometimes some will never be deep and it's okay. And there's some, almost some, I'll fling them away. I'm so sorry. I can't train everybody. I can't. So I think that's what it is. It's like the disadvantage of it, just experiencing something that's so great. You become extra picky. And with other people, you just can't. Like, I feel like it makes you selfish sometimes because, one, not everybody deserves to access that energy. And if you're not coming on my own level as well, why should I give you? Mm-hmm. Why should you enjoy all the sauce? Then you don't have any sauce for me. No. Let's stigmatize each other and go home. You know, so I think that's what it is for me.
I think to have one for, like, stigmatizing and one for sauce.
Yeah.
I think one of the most annoying things about being, like, being in that sauce mindset or, like, being a person who exudes sauce is that you become so attuned to a specific kind of person that
nobody's good enough. Nobody's good enough.
Like, I wish it was the nobody's a good enough part. Like, you become so attuned to that kind of a specific kind of person that you start to see them everywhere. Like, you are scrolling through Instagram and you're just like, yeah, this one, follow, DM. And like, you become so, like, you have almost your ability to gauge who is going to be attracted to you too becomes so precise that you struggle to have like mediocre sex. And elevated sex has so much emotional baggage.
Yeah.
Because every time you have that with one person as a source person, you're like, is this the person? Am I selling myself short if I don't explore more? Should I open the door a bit more? Like, I understand that, you know, we have, but is this like real? And like having like 5 or 6 people there doing, is this real?
I'm screaming. I feel like settling is definitely one of my biggest fears in this life. Like settling and finding out that, imagine being with somebody for 5 years and then one day you experience something great and you're just like, wow, all those 5 years I was here when that one was there. Exactly. So I get it. I definitely get it. So it's all about, they want to choke me and tell me, cut the cameras. It's all about, you know, being self-aware, finding where to compromise, finding where to be content.
Yes.
But you know me, I also believe in, I always say, sexual self-actualization, finding the peaks of who you can be.
Mm-hmm.
So many of us are not even scratching the surface. We've never started.
Or by birth. Either one is fine. as long as you're giving the nuts.
Yeah, and like, give, you just give yourself the space and the time to explore and to learn and to, you know, to enjoy this beautiful gift that we've been given by nature. It's not all dirty and nasty and evil.
It's not.
So, enjoy. Yeah, we have to wrap up now because if you leave us here, we'll talk for like 2 hours. Thank you so much for coming. Tell everyone where they can find you and what you do.
You can find me on @GothBoy. @EdGothBoy on Twitter and Instagram. Please don't follow me on Instagram, but
I'm screaming.
Twitter is great. I have a Substack. It's called openthecorral.substack.com. I have an article about lube on it. It's really exhaustive and you might learn a thing or two, so check that out.
Thank you so much. And you know where to find me at House of Chocolates. Find the podcast at Spit or Swallow Pod. Our backup page is SOS Pod Official because sometimes Meta be trying to silence us, you know. SOS Pod Official on Twitter, Spit or Swallow Pod on TikTok. Find us on YouTube as well, Spit or Swallow Podcast. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe. What else?
And share with your friends.
Tip of the week.
What's my tip of the week? I would say when you get to that point, the bridge where it feels like you're about to pee.
AKA, ladies and gentlemen, that camera is not on me. I'm going to bite you. I'm going to take that part again. AKA, ladies and gentlemen, he says squirts. P.O. release, so just unclench. Release the muscle. Okay. Thank you so much, Ed.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. It was great as usual. See you.
Halima used to challenge me, so, you know.
I love that. I mean, you challenge me as well. Like, I love, you know, I can just keep quiet and reflect. You always make me reflect on my own experiences as well. I mean, it's always amazing having you. Alrighty. Bye, guys. Peace.